Okay. Okay. Thank you now. Thanks so much. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning to everybody who is in the meeting, the committee members, the minister, deputy minister, and the rest of the supported teams. Welcome to our first meeting of the portfolio committee on tourism. But I think before we can start, honorable members, let me just indicate to the committee that yesterday I spoke to the chair. The chairperson is not well. She was saying to me she is hospitalized. She has not been well since December. So she will not be able to attend or to chair this meeting, honorable members. So it means now we have to, before we start, we have to elect an acting chairperson who will preside over this meeting. If it is possible or the members feel in that way, I would propose that we elect an acting chair. Meanwhile, the chair is still hospitalized, so that whenever there are issues that need for the attention of the chairperson to be attended, the correspondence and other matters, those matters can be attended, honorable members. I don't know, that was my suggestion from the support team, so that we can have an acting chair that will be presiding over this meeting and also preside on the future meetings. Meanwhile, the chair is still absent until she fully recovers and come back. With those few words, honorable members, I welcome everybody to this first meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism. On behalf of the support team, to say happy 2022 to everybody, because it's the first time we meet each other for a formal committee meeting this year. And then if the committee will allow me, can I then, honorable members, request the committee members to make proposals so that we can elect an acting chair who will be presiding over this committee meeting. Thank you, honorable members.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Mr. Boltina. Also from ourselves to yourselves, the staff, the support team of Parliament, we are saying all of the best for 2022. My name is Honorable Hein April, and I would suggest or propose that the chairperson, the acting chairperson of this meeting would be our WIP, Honorable Mpushe. That is my proposal.
Propose Honorable Mpushe. Okay. Can I have the second, honorable members?
Good morning.
Honorable Chair.
That is so.
Can I get some clarity before I say anything? Because my understanding is that is Marsha Luzo who's the
hello. Committee.
So now where is Mpushe coming from now?
No, I'm sorry. It's a mistake. I meant to say Makubela. I'm very sorry. It is our whip. Makubela, I'm sorry about that.
Oh, okay. Honorable Makubela. Okay. Thanks, Honorable April. Honorable Makubela's name is proposed, Honorable Members. Can I have the seconder? Hi, Honorable Mbuse. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Yes. I move to second the nomination of the acting chair, Mem Makubela, our Honorable Whip. Thank you.
Okay. The name of Honorable Lusizo Makubela is being seconded, the Honorable Members. Honorable Makubela, please can you take the platform and share this part session of the meeting, Honorable Members. As you know, today we will be having a presentation from the minister, and the minister will be responding to some of those issues that were raised that we parked them before during our BRRR process, and then we have agreed as a committee that let's park those issues and then we deal with them in the new year. So we've proposed this today's date, Honorable Members, to be our committee meeting date so that we can provide that kind of opportunity to the minister to and her team to brief the committee on a number of issues that were raised by the AGs in the last meeting when we met with them. Whip, over to you. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Boltina. Good morning,
good
morning, members of Parliament. The DG leading the department, the minister and the deputy minister, who are the executive functions of the department deployed to the executive accordingly, and members of parliament, members of the portfolio committee, our support team. Allow me to take this opportunity to wish you all a prosperous 2022 as we kickstart the year. And you are most welcome to the portfolio committee meeting. This is the first meeting for the year 2022.
Recording in progress.
In the same vein, allow us also to send our well wishes to the chairperson, Honorable T. Mahambe Hlala. May we wish her a speedy recovery so that she can be able to come back and take the reins and continue the good work that she is doing in leading this portfolio committee. Honorable members, can I then invite the secretariat to fly to the agenda so that we can get into the business of the day accordingly? Honourable members, the agenda is in front of us. Can I invite an honourable member to move for the adoption of the agenda so that we can continue with the agenda?
Thank you, Acting Chair. Acting Chair, this is Honourable April. I propose the adoption of the agenda.
Can I then invite another honourable member to second the adoption of the agenda?
Thank you, Acting Chair, Melina Gomba. I second the adoption of the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Members. Honorable Members, as we have, as the Secretariat has indicated, the Chairperson has a standing apology. She is not well, feeling she is not well. I have also been advised by the Chief Whip of the majority party that the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee is not well and is on sick leave for the entire month. We would like to wish her a speedy recovery. can I then also invite the secretariat to table to us any other apologies that were forwarded to the secretariat?
Okay, good day, Chair, again. Chair, I have another apology that I have here. Honorable De Freitas indicated, Chairperson, that he will be with us up to 11 o'clock, Chairperson. And then the second apology, Honorable Moteka was experiencing some load shedding on his side. But he will be joining the meeting through telephone or if there's electricity supply, then she will be able to join again. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Pontina. We note these apologies as tabled before us. Honorable members, allow me to then move straight to the business of the day. The business of the day, honourable members, is that the committee can recall that while we were dealing with the BRRR process in the last quarter of 2021, there were issues that were raised by the Office of the Auditor General in respect of our portfolio committee, in respect of our portfolio, which is the Department of the National Department of Tourism, and also its entity, South African Tourism. Then the minister was requested to give an account into remedies and mitigation around the issues that were raised by the Auditor General. We know that there were some serious matters that were raised, and also the minister has then undertaken to look into these matters and revert back to the portfolio committee with answers and processes on how the department is mitigating against a recurrence or a repetition of the same issues that were raised by the Auditor General. This is the opportunity then, honorable members, where the minister is afforded the time to bring back the issues to the portfolio committee and then indicate to us to say, this is the work that has been done. These are the issues, from the issues that were raised, especially the issues of the matters of serious emphasis and the matters where the AG had serious concerns which also resulted in the entity and the department getting qualified opinions in their in their books for the financial year 2021. Allow me then, honorable members, to invite the minister to take us through her responses and the issues that she is now bringing to the portfolio committee to say these are the measures and the steps that are taken to remedy the serious findings that were picked up by the Auditor General. Honorable Minister, we now invite you to speak to the portfolio committee.
Thank you very much. I am having a problem. Can you hear me? Acting Chair of the Portfolio Committee, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'd like to recognize the Deputy Minister, the Chair of the Board, and I'd like to say to the committee, I hope that they've had a restful time over the festive season. We are going into a very hectic year to try and make up for the losses that most of our industries have suffered. I'd like to, on behalf of my office and myself, to also express my support to the chair, who is in hospital, and wish her a very speedy recovery. Chairperson, I have with me the Deputy Minister and members of my staff, so we will share the workload amongst each other. And I'm glad that the representatives of the various affected entities are with us. I had hoped, Chair, to flight today the actual recording of the report of the Auditor General when he was reporting to us about the outcomes of the financial year that we're dealing with. It was recorded, but unfortunately they are unable to share it. They use it for their own purposes, and we were not able to access it and give it to you. The reason why I wanted it is so that we are not conflicted on the interpretation of the language that is used by the Auditor General, because he did use some very harsh words with us, and we wanted you to understand that those harsh words come from the Auditor General, and we have responded to that by making sure that we have a thorough investigation into those matters that you have referred us to. I want to express my appreciation to all of you for the oversight work that the Portfolio Committee performs over the tourism industry. I greatly welcome the support that the committee provides me as head of the executive of the Department of Tourism, and I'm encouraged by your passionate concern to want to see tourism playing its role increasing its contribution to the economic growth of our country, increasing its contribution to the GDP, and becoming a driving force behind job creation. Yesterday, we had a meeting with the Minister of Tourism from Kenya, and he advised us to look at the GDP and the contribution of tourism to the GDP at the point at which we were under lockdown, because he says that in Kenya, they were surprised to find that actually tourism contributed a greater percentage to the GDP than under normal circumstances. So we will do that, and if it does, then it means that we would need to celebrate that bit of hype. I want to indicate to you that I share your passion and compassion in helping us elevate tourism to the level that it should be. I'm enthused by your concerns about good governance and practices in the running of the tourism portfolio. Being an anti-corruption campaigner myself, I've been greatly impressed by your intolerance of instances of maladministration and ill governance, corruption, wastage of public resources. Your thorough interrogation of the Auditor General's report of our portfolio and your clinical analysis of our annual reports demonstrates how deeply you are prepared to go into those matters and ensure that we deal with all possible deficiencies, weaknesses, and any maleficence in our administrative system. As the chairperson has alluded, your intervention is all but intended to drive our portfolio to a clean audit environment in the future. In other words, we as a tourism portfolio need to ensure effective delivery of services to the benefit of our people. And this delivery has to happen within an administrative context that is professional, that is corruption-free. And as executive authority, I cannot agree with you more with that line of action that you are taking. In your last engagement with the Department of Tourism, you raised particular concerns about the violation, as the chair, acting chair, has just indicated about the violation of procurement prescripts, and called for me to institute investigation and probe instances where there is clear sign of corruption or misuse of state resources. Actually, you put it bluntly and you said, and I quote, "State money has been deliberately stolen," close quote. You requested my office to take a lead in investigating these cases. You also stressed the need for us to urgently develop an audit action plan that would guide us in resolving audit issues raised by the Auditor General's office. I'd like to report to you that I've taken the necessary steps to conduct the investigation as recommended. The department is finalizing the procurement processes to appoint an independent investigation team to conduct the investigation. This process is independent of the Department of Tourism. What we're going to give to you today is what we as a department have investigated, and we're reporting to you. But in addition to that, we've appointed an investigative team to conduct investigations so that you have an additional source of the outcomes of the Auditor General's report as you have requested. The Department and South African Tourism have developed corrective and audit action plans through which they have started addressing the audit issues that you raised, that had been brought by the Auditor General and you raised sharply with us. The Director General and the Acting Chairperson of the Board, and I did see her, I hope she is in today, have been instrumental in making sure that we are on the same page, and they will also be making presentations on the progress that we are making in their respective plans. As I conclude, I'd like to assure the committee that we will leave no stone unturned when we seek answers where fraud and corruption have happened, or where there has been deliberate misuse of state resources. We are setting the ball rolling to ensure that repayment of state funds, which individuals that have wrongly benefited from our program have been paid. Secondly, we will be applying consequence management to officials that are found to have deliberately committed acts of misconduct. Those who have left our institutions will also be followed through. Government allows us to follow through when there is an investigation. So we will make sure that everybody who might have to respond to some of the questions is available to us. In addition to taking these measures, we are also taking steps to ensure that we avoid the recurrence of audit issues that are picked up by the Auditor General each year. The administration, the administrative heads of the institutions have assured me that they will be putting up systems to avoid recurrence of the audit issues that were pointed out to you by the Auditor General. They will ensure maximum use of internal and audit committees and audit committee, including engaging the Auditor General to conduct in-year audits to ensure that potential audit issues are detected in time and addressed at an earlier stage. Allow me, Chairperson, therefore, to get on to another matter before I ask the Director General to take us through the presentation that we have prepared for you, to indicate that I have received a letter from the Public Service Commission dated... dated the 20th of the 11th, 2021. And the Auditor General says, dear Minister, there has been a complaint lodged within the anti-corruption hotline, case reference number 9920200910124341. That is the number of the complaint that was lodged in the hotline of the Public Service Commission. The Public Service Commission received a complaint through the National Anti-Corruption Hotline. The complaint pertains to allegations of procurement irregularities at the National Office of the Department of Tourism, hereinafter referred to as the Department. The complaint alleges that in the month of May 2021, a tender worth 150,000 rands for a cookout in Tembisa, Gauteng province was irregularly awarded to a disc jockey named DJ Shimza. It also alleged that the tender was irregularly awarded as DJ Shimza was not registered on the departmental database of service providers and that normal procurement regulations were contravened as other service providers that were registered on the database were not considered. Furthermore, DJ Shimza is alleged to have stated on social media that he was simply called to the department to submit a quotation and that he was subsequently awarded the tender. After consideration of the complaint, the Public Service Commission has decided to investigate the complaint in terms of its constitutional mandate, which provides the following. Section 1962 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1996, inter alia, determines that the Public Service Commission must exercise its powers and functions in the interest of the maintenance of effective and efficient administration and a high standard of professional ethics in the public service. And section 19641F of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa provides powers and functions to the Public Service Commission, which are, amongst others, to investigate and evaluate the application of personnel and public administration practices and to report to the relevant executive authority and legislature. Two, to investigate grievances of employees in the public service concerning financial acts of omission and recommend appropriate remedies. Three, to monitor and investigate adherence to applicable procedures in the public service. And finally, to advise national and provincial organs of state regarding personnel practices in the public service, including those relating to the recruitment, appointment, transfer, discharge, and other aspects of careers of the employees in the public service. In view of the above, and in order to enable the Public Service Commission to investigate the complaint, the Minister is requested to kindly provide the Public Service Commission with the details of a contact person that we can liaise with. Therefore, we want to inform you, Chairperson, through you to the Portfolio Committee, that we have an investigation being conducted on us by the Public Service Commission, and we will report on the progress of that. We decided we're going to inform you of this so that by the time you get to hear about it in the media, you will know that the Public Service is conducting an investigation into the incidents of the cookout in Tembisa. Chairperson, we will now go into the purpose that we want to attend to. We are going to give you the feedback of the Auditor General's report, and then we will give you feedback of the forensic review conducted by SNG Grant Thornton. We will also give you progress made on the implementation of the Auditor General's report on the forensic investigations recommendations. I will now ask that we flight the presentation, and we ask the DG to take us through the presentation with your permission, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to the Honorable Members and the officials that are connected to this call. And we have in total, we have got three presentations, as Minister has alluded to. Essentially, what we're going to be going through, the first presentation will cover the audit action plan of the department. And that audit action plan of the department would include the controls that we have now put in place, as well as the progress with regards to the implementation of the actual controls that have been put in place. What is perhaps important to emphasize would be the fact that we designed these controls with the idea to be able to put corrective measures for the system, and not only to deal with the events, so to say, so that the system would be able to be more responsive in future, and the system would be in a position to also provide us with the requisite controls that we do not find ourselves actually getting into similar challenges. The areas that we're going to cover, the findings were in the areas of supply chain management, they were in the areas of the relief funds that we actually extended, They were also in the areas of performance information. And we are going to try and be exhaustive, particularly when it comes to the issues of the funds. We'll have to make sure that we bring on board the honorable members and give a clear indication of the events leading up to the implementation, as well as the actual implementation and how that actually was rolled out, and the processes that we are currently undertaking as we speak. We will then go to performance information, which was also highlighted, and what controls that we put in there. And the last area that we would also go into will be the ICT environment, which would also be an area that we have actually done some extensive work on to be able to ensure that we close those gaps. I will ask the CFO, the acting CFO, to go through some of the parts. But in the meantime, what I'm going to do is to go through this. I will then come back and go through the second presentation that the minister referred to, the SNG audit, forensic audit. And this is a matter, Chairperson, that you would recall that at the last sitting, there was a direct request that we should actually come back and actually provide this particular detail. Shall we move on to the next slide, Petra? Let's move to slide 3. Dealt with slide 2.
Coffee.
Slide 3. Honorable Chairperson, I'm not sure if it is my system that's not moving, but it's still on the cover slide. Petra, slide 3.
DG, I've got slide 3 on my side.
Projected.
Projected, yes.
We don't have it. So
we don't have it.
We don't have it.
Hello?
Minister?
Yes.
Can
yes.
you mute? Can you mute, Minister?
DG, can you see slide 3 now?
Yes, I can see it. Thank you very much, Petra. We, Honorable Chairperson, we've got in total 117 areas that we have identified out of the management report as well as the audit report itself. Of those 70 of them, we have already attended to, and to the point where we've brought them to conclusion. 13 areas are not yet due. So in these instances, it would be aspects perhaps that would require end of financial year for us to deem them concluded. And there is also 34 areas that are in progress, and we will allude to what that progress is. There is no area where there is inactivity, where there has not been anything done. So we've been progressing in that regard. Perhaps also just to highlight one of the department did not have any qualification. These were matters of emphasis in all the areas where the department had the findings. The audit report was an unqualified with matters. Shall we go to the slide 4, Petra? The first issue related to the issues around supply chain management was the issue about the minimum threshold of local content. Honorable members would recall that this is a recurring area. And what we have done in this instance, we got the supply chain people to be properly trained by the DTIC. And the reason why we did that was to make sure that they are familiar with these things. And we then discovered that the actual root cause was not because they did not know, but it was because of the checks and balances, so that we are able to say in each stage of the controls, it's not one person that's doing everything. There's somebody else who's also going to make sure that things are checked. So we then identified the control. There is an update of the request for quotations template, so that the local content aspect is included upfront, so that when they go through that checklist, they will then see, have we actually dealt with this? And if it is not dealt with, then we must make sure that it's dealt with. And then the second part of it was to make sure that the director of supply chain management also becomes the person who signs off on these RFQs once the functionaries have put them together, and ensure that the bid specifications also go through the similar process of quality assurance, that he would also then be able to verify whether that local content is actually in there. So that is actually now being applied. But what is also important is that it is followed through with regards to making sure that in the advertisements themselves, that is actually properly included. And to remedy the aspects of unfair procurement processes, and this is in relation to a security contract that is still currently running. And what happened with this particular security contract, I'm informed that there was a process where certain information at adjudication stage was actually not there, and the adjudication committee did not agree with awarding the tender that was deemed to have scored the list, and after which they then awarded the second best that had, according to them, met all the requirements and so on. And once that was done, the AG found that there could be an irregularity that they flagged it. And what we have now done is to make sure that that particular matter is disclosed in the financials. Let's go to five, because that's where the story continues. And we have written to the office of the Chief Procurement Officer and made a request that the whole process of that particular tender. Petra, please let's project the slide. Slide five. Thank you. We have requested the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer to review this entire process so that they could come to a determination with regards to the actual decision on the award and whether that process falls within the scope of irregularity, so that we can then treat this matter and conclude it. We discussed this matter with the AG as well to say this is the process that we're actually going to be following. We are also getting a legal opinion on that particular process, because it was an administrative decision that had been taken by a body that is authorized to do so, and they've made certain considerations. So all those will then be reviewed so that we are in a position to be able to conclude with certainty what action needs to take place in this regard. The issues related to non-compliance with the Treasury practice note. This matter, Honorable Chairperson, largely relates to what Minister has shared with the committee this morning. In the main, the matter we disclosed the potential irregular expenditure, and this was because the actual payment had not taken place. So the event took place within a particular financial year, and the payment took place across the next financial year, which is the current financial year. So that disclosure was done. There was an initial investigation that was done on this matter from the department side, and that particular investigation was not as yet concluded. And the reasons for that was because the payment had not yet been done and the AG had not yet finalized their processes as well. So we are at a point where that final report, the internal final report, will then be issued, but it has got nothing to do with the other process that the minister has alluded to. Preliminarily, there were certain issues that we picked up there, and in the main would be the issues about where you're supposed to have three quotations, and ended up with two quotations, and those two quotations are not necessarily, you know, the system does not trigger that. The accounting officer should then authorize that particular deviation, which is permitted in terms of our prescripts, which then becomes a regular thing and so on. But that's preliminarily. Obviously, I would want to give the other process also its own chance, so that I also receive the actual report final from the process in terms of the internal process as well. The issues related to the indicators on the APP, we it's an area, Honorable Chairperson, that the committee would recall throughout the term we have not had these kinds of challenges, and here there was an error, and we then looked at what could have been the root causes of such an error. So we brought in a number of controls in this particular area, amongst which is to ensure that we strengthen the quality control, particularly as it relates to completeness and adequacy of the information. We also looked at ensuring that we strengthen combined assurance, and in this particular instance, we are looking at all the quality, I mean, all the assurance providers, from management to the people that do the coordination of performance information, to people that deal with the internal auditing aspects of this, to the leadership, to the executive authority, to the audit committee, to the AGSA, and ensure that all of this, and this is part of what the minister was also emphasizing, that this in-year audits would assist a lot in making sure that where there is possibilities of something going wrong, then we are able to detect such in time as well. Shall we? Thank you, Peter. In terms of asset management, immovable tangible capital asset management, the deficiencies there, we have an infrastructure policy that is in place, and that is actually being implemented. Additional things in relation to the implementation of that policy, all members would recall, we did report that we acquired the services of the Development Bank of Southern Africa to assist us with making sure that we are implementing these projects efficiently, economically, and effectively. And part of that is monthly PEACOM meetings that I sit in there with the executive director responsible for infrastructure from the DBSA side, and we go through the details of each individual project, where are we, what are the issues, what are the community issues, what are the financial issues, and all those kinds of things. So we bring all of these things together, and we are able to then be able to provide that level of assurance. And in terms of provision of management to provide assurance on the completeness of the records in relation to all these particular projects, one important aspect here is the fact that there is a third party that is implementing, and of course there are other projects that are not necessarily the DBSA that were already underway, that may be with either a provincial entity or any other entity. Those there is now a process in place where we are making sure that the records are actually checked and so on. So the framework for us to be able to say this is the actual checklist that you need to go through before you actually reposit this particular information into whatever database that we are using for this type of information. The process of actual verification now will then commence during this particular quarter, and making sure that going forward then we are able to provide that level of assurance. And of course the where we've got to ensure that there's a standard operating procedure that tells us from beginning to end, and the role players knowing precisely each step that they are supposed to take and so on. That is work that is quite in advance as we speak. We are almost about to also conclude that particular work as well. Immovable tangible assets, work in progress. Here we have concluded most of this work, but it's really about making sure that there's continuous monitoring of this work and projects and so on, but also making sure that those entities know precisely what they are supposed to report against a specific template and so on, so that we do not have lapses where one reports exhaustively, another one reports selectively and so on. So in this particular area we have been able to make sure that those things are done. Of course it all requires that verification that I talked about earlier, because in all these instances we must always recall that there will be some human element that could creep in on the other side where the project is being implemented, hence vigilance on our side would actually be the way to go in this regard. Let's move on. The issues about non-compliance with preferential procurement, we just go up a little bit. It starts with the bottom and slide it. Just go to slide it. Sorry. Thank you. The issues around non-compliance with the supply chain, with the preferential procurement, in terms of making sure that we are correct in the calculations. And I need to indicate here that the actual risk which could have been awarded to a wrong bidder did not materialize. But the identified risk needed to be remedied, which is that there were some mistakes in the calculations of the scores. Fortunately, I would say the actual award did not necessarily go to people who did not have particular scores. So that we have actually put a control there. All the role players in SCM, they were notified of this,
and some processes there in terms of how they should actually then deal with those calculations before, and the comparative schedules. Then the issue about the need for sign off at a senior level at a supply chain management, the where the director has got to make sure that these things are verified, so they will be compiled, verified, but when they come to the point where he signs off, you would obviously verify that and sign off again. But this must be against a standard checklist so that we don't find ourselves with the same problems. And this includes if it's a tender and it's been advertised and so on, the checklist will ask the, did we actually also include making sure that this thing is in the e-tender and so on. So those are the kinds of things that we are going to be making part of the system going forward, and not necessarily just for these particular instances where they occurred. Let's move on. Awards made to suppliers and service. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, this is a very difficult area to properly manage. And the reason for that is because the one system that we have access to that tells us whether a person is employed by the state in totality is the system for the payment of salaries, which is the PESAL system. However, that system has its serious limitations in that it can only tell us about public servants at a national level and public servants at a provincial level. We will never be able to detect those that are not in the PESAL system as to whether they are employed in the state or not. To try and remedy this, we have been engaging with the AG. We made the final request now that they must do in-year auditing of this particular service. Initially, we were trying to, of this particular function. Initially, we were of the view that perhaps they should provide us with what they call advisory services. But because this is a huge area of interest, it could create a challenge for them in terms of conflict of interest and so on. So they would then, if they agree to that, they would then go into these in-year services that they would provide to continuously audit. And if something has been awarded this month and the audit in the next month says, no, hang on, this person actually works for a municipality in such and such a place, we can then evoke other instruments and be able to suspend that particular contract and be able to probably at the end get it to be null and void. So that's the kind of approach that we have actually taken with regards to this. It's an area that really does require quite a lot of work. But some of the things that we believe may be within partly our control is that we are standardizing all these bidding forms, whether it's requests for quotations or whether it's tenders, to make sure that in that particular process, they will be the bidder will have to confirm that I so and so do not work for any state organization, and that would then be our basis to take on the person beyond the award should there be a need. And then the other aspects have spoken to this in terms of the PESAL aspect. So we are actually doing that. So that's the only part that is within our complete control. The other parts, we have to work with other parties. But those are the controls that we deem will be able to assist us to overcome this aspect. Let's move to the next slide. Petra, let us move to the next slide. Thank you. The non-compliance with National Treasury instructions and issues around transparency and accountability in terms of supply chain management, what we have done here, we have agreed that there should be closer monitoring of the application of delegations. One of the things that had happened in this area was we submitted the procurement action plan, which is something that we do on an annual basis. And during the time it was submitted, it was under the signature of the CFO. And unfortunately, it is a document that must be under the signature of the DG. So that's what had happened in that regard. So we have put in place mechanisms to ensure that there's adherence to delegation of authority, but also those that have got the responsibility to submit these various things that we've got to submit to different authorities must also then ensure that their checklists are clear about who is supposed to be the person. Templates are also updated, and the reason why we updated those templates is to make sure that the correct signatories must be reflected. So when that is the case, and almost a point where you lock the names there as well, so that would also be able to assist us. The limitation of scope, SENPAX. This is when we've got projects that are actually implemented by other entities of state. And part of the challenge is when the completeness of the information in terms of what is reported and all those kinds of things. So we have communicated to all these entities and be very clear about what it is that they need to do to be able to provide all the requisite documents, because when the AG comes, they can select a couple of projects and actually go to the implementing agent and go thoroughly and deeper to all those documents that they have got. So processes that we do at National, where you've got to follow the prescripts to the latter, they also have to do the same. And this, we've made an emphasis with all the entities that actually have a project that they're implementing on behalf of the department in this regard. So I think it's still the same thing. Then this specific one, number 14, the Housing Tourism Authority, this was a contract in relation to safety monitors project. And what we picked up was that the contract between our implementing agent, that is the Gauteng Tourism Authority, and the contractor did not have a date. So they raised an issue about that. They deemed it to be something material, given the nature of the contract. And we have then brought this to their attention, but continuously we then monitor whether such is not actually occurring in other contracts as well. Let's move on. The possible bid rigging, this is the matter that the minister put before the committee today, which is under the investigation of the Public Service Commission as to what exactly has happened in that regard. And the issue specifically here is that there seemed to be a bidder who had two companies bidding for the same opportunity, which would amount to one person actually bidding against oneself. And that's really the emphasis on this particular matter. And as I indicated, preliminary investigation had been conducted, and there is this other investigation, so I would not necessarily venture into the details, because I need a sign-off on that particular investigation, which should be anytime soon, within this month of January still. the issues around the records and all those aspects, and they relate amongst others to the keeping of the records, the minutes, and all those aspects, as it relates to the disposal committee of the department. So the AG was concerned that disposals would take place and so on, but the actual minutes were not necessarily kept to say this is what we discussed and this is what we agreed and so on, even if the execution might be in that particular way. So we have this electronic management, document management system in the department, which we use for workflows, for filing and all those types of issues. We have now opened a file within that particular system that has all the necessary documentation, the meetings that they are having, the records must be there, the agendas and all those kinds of things. And that then allows us to be able to say this is why the execution of the disposal went in a particular way, because these records are actually in place. So that has actually been attended to, is that. The completeness of the deed register, that has been amended, and we commenced with the implementation. So that's something that we are now, this is behind us. Part of it was to make sure that we should be clear. This thing was brought on such a day and such a time, and it has been signed for by this particular individual and so on, so that we don't have somebody tomorrow saying, I did come and I did throw something into the box. What happened to it? And then when we go to the records, we actually don't find it. So that is some control that we've now brought to be able to deal with it. This was a specific instance, the declaration of local content in terms of the PPPs that were bought. And the issue here in the main was that in the request for quotations, the local content requirements were not flagged, and that was even after the training and so on. So there has been some process followed in the office of the CFO with regards to people that were responsible. But the main thing now is that local content, there's a specimen in the template that it's not possible to actually miss that, whether it's in the advert or whether it's in the putting together of the specifications themselves. Tangible assets misstatement. There were a couple of actions here that we identified as controls, including asset verification, including the issues that we had raised about the capacity within that particular unit to be able to deal with this. We have now sourced external capacity to be able to make sure that this is done properly. They are currently going through the process of verification, which commenced sometime in mid-October, it's work in progress, and we are happy with the progress that we are seeing thus far, and we believe that this kind of approach is actually going to assist us going forward. I would Honorable Chairperson, pass 20 and 21, because the controls are the same that we are actually applying throughout this. They all relate to the intangible assets, the tangible assets, just that in some are minor assets, and in some are not, they are in the category of large assets and so on, but it's all in the category of this particular movable assets category. Move on to Kalitra. The differences between the annual financial statements and the minor fixed assets, still this is part of that. So 23, non-compliance with the BBBE regulations, there is a requirement that we must submit the annual report to the BBBE commission, and that's something that had eluded us. So what we have now put in place is a control. Overall, we are making sure that there's a clear checklist overall in terms of what are the requirements for submissions to who and so on, what should be part of some of the elements that should be in the annual report document itself and so on, and all those kinds of things. So we have closed this particular gap, and we do believe that it would not be a problem going forward. For the 2020-21, we've already made that particular submission. Now we'll step off from the supply chain management and move to the category of the tourism relief funds for tourist guides.
You are noted, Minister.
Thank you very much. I'd like the DG to move a little faster. We have the number of reports that we have to attend to. The other one is from the entity that you asked us to look into. They are here to give a report and to give yourselves time to ask questions. So I'm going to ask him to move a little faster than he is in terms of the pace. We need to give yourselves and the entity enough time to respond as well, please.
Thank you, Minister. DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will attempt to summarize this area of the tourist guide. We took the entire set of the findings from the AG and the various recommendations. We verified the area related to the category of people that are deceased, whose money was redeemed. And originally there were 17 people in that category. When we verified, we found that 7 people redeemed the money. And of the 7 people that redeemed the money, the combined total of that money came to 16,500. We have reported that matter to the police. In fact, in the discussions with the SAPS, as we're opening this case, they were saying to us that part of what they would also do on their side is to check whether from the Master of Court, there could have been some that had access to the readily available immediate funds and so on. But they have already assigned an investigating officer, and that matter will then be investigated there. Recovery in this particular instance will only be on the basis of us having received the information from the police to say, here we have got this one and here we have got that one. Now, the second area was the area where there were duplicates that were identified. In total, there were 26. We then went through a verification process of those 26 the 26 that were identified. How many actually redeemed the duplicated payment? And we found that it was 5 that actually did that redemption. So those 5 that did that redemption, the letters for recovery have already gone out to them. There was an area of municipal workers and workers in other departments, in other entities and so on. That whole category, and all these are people that have received this. More or less in that category, there was about 46, 47 people that were implicated. The letters have gone out in terms of recovery and so on. Muhit might want to actually share the actual figures in that regard, but the letters have actually gone out. And the total amount that we're talking about in this category is plus minus 190,000. Then there is a category of people that are in the UIF database. I want to just explain in this category what the process that we followed was. In the inception of the scheme, initially, the intention was to undertake all these different types of verification, whether it is home affairs and so on, all the different types of this. And when we then went through that particular process to say this is what would then happen and so on, the final approved scheme was such that we needed to get the provincial database and also a confirmation from the province to say, because the registrars who actually registered the guides are in the provinces, they then feed the information to the national registrar to put in one database. But because it was an instantaneous activity, we needed to go back and say, are these the people? And then they gave us that information. Once that information was given, the second test that was approved to be conducted was to go to UIF. UIF then checked everything and they came back with a set of names that they said these people are in our database. So they would not necessarily be qualifying for your scheme. We then agreed with that and we took the names that were not found in their database as active. And we submitted that information to the provincial tourist guides registrars again and said, please verify this one more time and confirm with us that this information is indeed, as of today, the correct information in terms of the guides that are active in your database and in your register. They then wrote us letters and confirmed that indeed that is the case. So once that was done, we then proceeded with the payment of this money. Now the payment was actually through the cell phone system using ATSA, and then the monies were then redeemed in that regard. So we have taken the names that are deemed to be within the UIF database to the UIF again to say, UIF, these are the names that were found by AGSA after you had given us the previous names. Kindly advise us as of this status of these people. And they will then come back to us. We are told that there are instances where one would have been an employee somewhere, and if a person has been an employee and contributing, the employer was contributing to UIF, the person would be in that particular system. The person then gets retrenched, receives the UIF and so on. When the screen dumps of the shops that are actually then used by AGSA and others who actually use the same system, the CAT system, are taken there, they may then identify people who are not necessarily still active in the UIF, but they happen to be there. And it does happen also with systems like PayPal and so on. So that verification will then tell us whether these indeed were people that actually benefited twice. And this was a category that was actually ruled out completely by our scheme. So they cannot benefit from it at all. The second part of it relates to the work that the people that were on the SASA database and also on our database in terms of benefiting. We know that SASA had made it quite explicit that you should not have benefited from any other. We did not have that in our scheme specifically. We have now written also to the SASA CEO, and they have indicated that they are working on that matter to look into it in detail. So those are the areas that I wanted to highlight with regards to this. And going forward, I've also written to the HODs to look into the matter of the information that we were supplied with that was actually not correct in some of these instances. We found one instance where a person passed away in 2018, so it was already 2 years after the person had passed away that the money was actually then redeemed. And the fact that the validity period of the registration is 3 years, there could be instances here where there was absolutely no activity in that register until such time that we actually requested for this particular information. So that is what we've done in this regard. And the instances where there were the AG reported that there were no IDs, initial verification from our side yielded that the IDs that were identified, that were provided, some of them were not necessarily South African IDs, but various forms of permits that are provided by Home Affairs and so on to be able to say this person is permitted to do certain activities, particular activities in the country. So we have requested again the registrars to then go and bring that information back final now again to say re-authenticate, and then that information is actually going to go to Home Affairs so that the various forms of permits are then authenticated, that these permits, and also they must, because they must actually attach the statement of that permit that was actually submitted, so that that goes to Home Affairs as well, and we will then be in a position to conclude this. We did not find a record without a form of identification, except that it would not necessarily be the South African ID number, but each of them actually had some form of identification. So once Home Affairs has gone through that particular process, we will then be in a position. I'm informed that yesterday was the date by which we are receiving all this information from the provinces. So once Home Affairs has actually given us all of that information, we'll then be in a position to conclude on this particular matter properly. In terms of ICT, we had an issue about areas where a person would leave the system, but the account of the person will still be active and not yet terminated. So we are attending to that, but there are certain requirements in terms of hardware that we still need to attend to. We have placed orders and all that to be able to receive those, but it has just been an issue in terms of suppliers in some of the instances, delaying some of these processes. Let's move on, I think. The Tourism Relief Fund and the overpayment by 50,000 to one company out of 4,000 companies. We have done the investigation of this, and we have actually given we have got the outcome, and part of that outcome was the basis upon which we have instructed the state attorney to be able to commence with the process of recovery. They have already served the summons and everything, but what we have also done is to communicate that outcome to the board from South African Tourism side, and on my side as well as the accounting office of the department, we are now conducting a liability test in terms of the functionaries that were responsible for this particular activity, so that we are in a position to be able to apply the necessary consequence management where applicable. Petra, that will be all in terms of this particular presentation. I would suggest Honorable Chairperson, through the Minister, that we take the presentation of SAT and then we will come back to the SNG one. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. I go now to the representative, with your permission, Chair, of the South African Tourism Board.
Yes, Minister, you can invite the chairperson of the board.
Thank you, Advocate Mojang Kumbi. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you very much, Acting Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, Deputy Minister DG. Thank you very much for affording us the opportunity to come back to you. This is a follow-up to our meeting last year, just to report on steps that we have taken since then. Just for context, let me start by saying that following the receipt of the 2020-21 audit outcome and the findings of the board-initiated forensic investigation, the board has implemented a few measures to improve internal controls. Members would remember that we initiated a forensic investigation because the South African Tourism, over and above the allocated funds we receive, we have a levy that is that's called the South African Tourism Levy that we receive, is collected by our partners and paid over to South African Tourism. So within that levy, a portion of it is set aside into what is called a collaborative fund. So that collaborative fund is managed by a third party, but the levy is managed by. So what informed the board's decision to initiate this forensic investigation is that it became clear that the collaborative fund and the levy were mixed up. And what should have happened is that the SEM processes of South African Tourism should have been followed in appointing, in particular, two companies to do work for South African Tourism. Now, I should say that once we initiated the forensic investigation, we then spoke to the Auditor General even before we got the final forensic investigation report. So we shared with the Auditor General the interim report, as a result of which, therefore, the Auditor General, after we shared the final one, made the finding that the office did of irregular expenditure. So we accepted the finding and the qualified opinion because we initiated the investigation. So two areas, Chairperson, that we had to deal with. First of all, we had to deal with the consequence management, as we say there, and then we also had to deal with recovering the funds that had been spent. So on the consequence management, we got the legal opinion and we've taken action against two executives that report directly to the board. And we have, those two have since received written warnings, which will be in their employment record for a period of 6 months. And then there are those that report to line managers within South African Tourism. And those ones, their consequence management processes are on. And we hope that, I think they will be done before the end of the financial year. So that's the consequence management side. On the recovery of the funds that were paid, let me first say that we asked the forensic investigators, not once, but twice at least, whether there's any indication of money having been misappropriated, stolen, or otherwise, and they assured us that they have not found any evidence of that. What they have found is just that people have paid out of the wrong fund and paid, you know, two companies, one of which they thought was not really the best company to do the work that it's supposed to be. So we're taking action against those companies, and we've served legal papers already against them, both companies. The application was served on the 30th of December 2021. Against those companies. So that's the part where we seek to recover whatever money is due to South African tourism. On the remedial measures, Chairperson, we have an audit outcome action plan, and very soon I will ask the chief financial officer to speak to it. But what we are doing is that we are strengthening our SCM processes. We are also in the process designing a program through our ARCO, and our audit and risk committee chairperson is online as well, to design a program where we actively ensure that we capacitate that section, and we also mentor them. We also make sure that they are aware of all the prescriptive, the PFMA, the treasury regulations, the SAT rules and regulations, all of that. We've put a condition, Chairperson, on the CFO and that department to say we want to make sure that this year's report is clean. There's not even a mistake that is coming through, and that's the condition. If that condition is not met, we'll definitely take firmer action against the CFO. We have also, it may not be here, we also immediately reduced the delegation of authority as one of the measures we took. South African tourism spends a big amount on single projects, I think, by its nature, because it also works a lot internationally. But we've reduced the delegation of authority to 10 million. It results in lots of meetings for the board, but the board has said it would rather have meetings every time to approve spending rather than allow what happened in the past to happen again. With your permission, Chair, I would like to ask our CFO to speak to the specific recommendations or specific findings of the Auditor General. Very quickly, no, CFO.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members and Chair, Minister, Deputy Minister, the DG, and colleagues. I'm going to take you through the presentation that we did, and the context thereof is that we went through our annual report presentation to portfolio committee, and then we looked or reviewed the mitigations and what we had committed to change the audit outcome as well as improve on the findings that we raised to make sure that there's no recurrence. And then the current presentation that we have is a linkage between the two. It also gives a progress report, including whether or not there's been any movement in the
in the mitigations that we had proposed when we came to portfolio committee in November 2021. Yes. So I think for context as well, the structure of the report is such that we've gone back to the actual audit report. We've isolated those items that were reflected in the audit report, focusing on the ones that led to the qualification, the ones that were emphasis of matter, and that's what I'm going to take the portfolio committee members through, Chair. I think the first one, it's the finding that impacted the audit report in 2021, and it related to the limitation in two line items of our financial statements, which was on the expenditure and receivables. And the limitation related to the AG's inability to verify the completeness of expenditure for these two line items. When we presented in November, part of the mitigations that we had proposed at the time is that we're not going to have similar transactions in the current year. And Chair, that was us trying to deal with the root cause so that we don't end up with a similar finding in the current year audit. I can confirm in terms of progress that we don't have, we've reviewed our population and we don't have similar transactions in the current year. In addition to that, to deal with the issue of limitation on completeness, is that as soon as the finding was raised, we went through a process of doing detailed reconciliations of all third party payments so that we can then have a sense or a quantifiable value in terms of how much that expenditure was. And then to deal with the asset side, which is sitting in our balance sheet, so the receivable, we did an external confirmation with the third party involved to confirm the actual amounts of the receivable. So in terms of the progress, I can confirm that the mitigations that we had put in place, we have actioned them, and we've also then dealt with the root cause by ensuring that there's no recurrence in the current year. Linked to that limitation, there was an irregular expenditure that we had to disclose due to there being no procurement process for goods and services paid by third parties. So the immediate action was, and it was based on the recommendation from the AG to disclose confirmed irregular expenditure. That was done before the issuance of the audit report, but there were further steps to make sure that we remedy the non-compliance, which included the legal opinion that the chairperson of the board spoke to, as well as conducting internal consequence management. I think I'll just highlight that under audit finding two, what is still in progress and planned to be completed by the end of the financial year is consequence management for officials that were implicated in the investigation report. Chair, included as well in the audit report was the outcomes of the audit of performance information, so our predetermined objective. So this was not a qualification, but it was a material finding that was a matter of emphasis in our audit report, and it related to the audit of our program three report, leisure tourism, where the AG was unable to find evidence on usefulness and reliability of performance information. The work that we did immediately when we got the actual audit finding was that how do we then isolate the root cause, fix that so that there's no recurrence going forward. So we ensured that as part of the planning process for the current year financial audit, we take all our indicators and make sure that they are crafted on the basis of the SMART criteria. I can confirm that has been done. I can further confirm that during this quarter, so about when the AG started with the interim audit, we've shared our APP document, including the performance information report, so that we can then have early warning signs should there be issues with our performance information. I think that's particularly important because we've gone through a process of reviewing our audit strategy document with the AG, which was presented to our ARCO in our last meeting. And they've confirmed that even in the current financial year, this specific program, so program three, will be audited or scoped in as part of the audit for the current financial year. Chair, so in the audit report, there were two issues. So there are issues that impact the audit report, so material issues, which I dealt with in the first slide, but there were matters of emphasis. So those would be audit findings that are sitting in the report to the accounting authority, but have been included in or referenced to in the audit report. So there were instances of non-compliance in the or deficiencies noted in the procurement and conduct management environment. I think what's key there, Chair, was that, again, isolating the root cause, we found that the basis for the finding was incorrect scoring. And it was due to, because it's an automated process, there was system configuration issues. But because the review or the procurement is ongoing, we couldn't wait for the system issues to be dealt with. We needed an immediate resolve for the issue so that we prevent any audit findings going forward whilst the system issues are being dealt with by our ICT department. So what we then did is that we added an additional layer of assurance within the SEM environment, where the SEM compliance manager is now responsible for reviewing. And it's an interim measure, but it's very necessary for reviewing all bid scoring manually until such time that the actual solve, which is our system, is up and running. I think just as a compensating control, again, to make sure that we deal with these issues and we don't have issues going forward, is that on a quarterly basis, we have an independent internal audit that takes place that focuses on the performance information environment as well as our SEM environment. And that is to track during the year if there are any material issues of concerns that should be raised. So to date, the internal audit function has completed supply chain management quarterly audits for quarter one to quarter three. The last quarter audit is due at the end of this quarter. And then just secondly, the other issues that was included as another important matter was the issue of publication of awards, as well as having a complete register for investigation. I think the management action that we had committed to when we presented in November was to make sure that in instances where the systems are not available and we need to provide the information to the AG, we will file all live documents. We'll take a screenshot and literally make it as form part of our procurement file, so that should anyone need to verify the information, it's easily available, even in a different format. So I can confirm that we've been actioning, or we've actioned commitment that we've made on the mitigation. I can further confirm that as part of the SEM audits that I've referenced on a quarterly basis, this is then something that gets checked by an audit assurance provider, which is our internal audit function. Similar to the list of investigations or assessment that needs to be maintained. When the AG audited us in the previous financial year, they found that the register was sitting in different functions. So we had a function that we had a register that was sitting with our SEM function, and another one that was sitting with our internal audit function due to such sensitivities around certain investigations. The decision we made is that then centralize the management and accountability for this register, and it now sits with head of internal audit, and it's because he's got a holistic view at any given time of all assessments and investigations that are going on in the organization. Yeah, we had a number of Digitech findings, which were also included in our report as other important matters. I think the key ones that I'm going to highlight, because the ones that we presented during the annual report presentations, about 14 of them, we had 16 findings, about 14 of them have subsequently been closed. So I'm going to focus on the two that are still open so that I can give a sense of where we are in terms of actioning the recommendations. So the first one related to a lack of audit logs for program change, as well as inadequate or insufficient segregation of duty in our ICT environment. The action that we had committed to was that we would enhance the network security systems to ensure that there's better monitoring of the logs, and we had committed to get this done by the end of the financial year. The current status is that we are in progress, and then in terms of the action that we've taken is that we've contracted with the supplier that will be able then to help us deal with the root cause for the specific finding. And then the second finding related to a Microsoft Windows operating system that was unsupported, and it was linked to two legacy applications that we have run, that are running on our two servers with old versions of the operating system. I can confirm, Chair, that this finding is ready for audit. So what we put when we track our findings, ready for audit is when the business unit or the responsible official has closed the finding. But before we can go to our audit committee and indeed confirm that the finding has been closed, there's an additional process where our internal audit functions validates that you've dealt with the root cause, you've dealt with the possibility of the finding recurring in future, and it's indeed closed. So the one that's sitting as ready for audit, we're waiting for that confirmation from our internal audit, just to confirm that the mitigations that we put in place actually address the risk that was identified by the AG. Chair, I'll move on to the slides that then gives a link between the annual report presentation and our progress to date. And the reason for that is because the other ICT findings that are contained in the report have been achieved, and we give the details on the slide. So just linking back to the previous report, for the audit of predetermined objectives, the mitigation that was sitting there in our commitment to portfolio committee was to ensure that in the planning process for the current year, we craft all indicators in terms of the SMART criteria. Progress to date, I can indeed confirm that AG has considered the action that we took in the previous financial year to make sure there's no recurrence in the current year, and they did not raise any matters in this regard. I can also confirm that there's a combined assurance model that was developed and approved to assess any mitigations that are taken and implemented in this environment. And then lastly, what I've said, which is also linked to the SEM environment, is that we have quarterly reviews to prepare us for year end, so that should there be any issues, we are able to flag them and report on them in advance. Chair, in the audit report, and it's under matter of emphasis, there was also a reference to those targets that we didn't meet in the previous financial year. And when we presented our annual report, we had put certain mitigations to deal with targets in the performance information area that were not met. So the purpose of this slide is just to give a progress to date on those mitigations. I think it's also important because most of these targets, even though the slide relates to the previous financial year, actually sit in the current performance information report. So they will be audited again in the current financial year. So one of the targets that we didn't meet in the previous financial year include reference or was related to the implementation of valid internal and external audit recommendations. I can confirm, Chair, that for this specific finding, which is in fact tracked and monitored independently by our internal audit, we've put mitigations in place. I can also confirm that this specific target, because of the nature of the target, that it's executed in different business units depending on where those audit findings reside, is now being managed by at the office of the CEO, and the office of the CEO actually takes remedial actions against those executives when recommendations are not being implemented on time or as committed to. We also then had a finding around maximum vacancies as a percentage of headcount, so a target that was not met in the previous financial year. And we had committed at the time to deal with the underperformance by making sure that where there's a need, we will then submit specific motivations to fill critical vacancies. I can confirm the progress to date that in quarter three, there was a lifting of the moratorium. It then means that we are then able to work towards remedying the underperformance in this area and making sure we don't have a recurrence in the current financial year audit. Again, in program two, there were two areas of underperformance that were noted in or referenced to in the audit report. And they related to the automation of business processes, as well as the B2B based portal that needed to be delivered by the end of July 2020. So on the automation of business processes, I can confirm that the progress is that we've automated just over 80% of our processes via the BPM project. And the team is then working this quarter to make sure that whichever processes that were identified and has still not been automated, that that work gets done by the end of the financial year, so that we are then able to take that target as achieved. And then on the B2B portal, the progress to date on that finding, Jay, is that the team that is responsible for the project has collaborated with the Transformation Council of South Africa in order to facilitate the identification of SMMEs to be put on the platform. And then there's work that is being done by the Digitech team to make sure that the target that was underperformed in the previous financial year actually gets remedied going forward. And then on program two, Chair, there was when the AG did an analysis of target versus actual performance, there was a limitation or an underperformance that was noted around the MIF. And I can confirm the progress to date that our insights and analytics team has been working on the MIF with the objective of making sure that we are then able to meet these targets or remedy the underperformance that was reported by the end of the financial year. Then, Chair, I'll just again just touch on, which I've already dealt with in my opening slides, on the material issues that were affecting the audit report and confirm progress to date. So on the issue of the limitation, I can confirm that the mitigation that we had committed to when we came to Parliament in November, that we've actioned that. Supplier reconciliations are in place. We don't have similar transactions in the current year, and there are quarterly audits of our financial information to make sure that should there be any deficiencies, those are picked up throughout the financial year and dealt with during the financial year as well. And then on the issue of the irregular expenditure, our immediate mitigation was to implement the AGSA's recommendations in the supply chain management function. I can confirm that all instances of irregular expenditure have been investigated, and then most of them are at an advanced stage in terms of the treatment in line with irregular expenditure framework. And what is currently outstanding is on the payments made by third parties, is the consequence management for those staff members that don't report to board. And the progress to date there, or the commitment, is that that will be completed by the end of 31 March 2022. And it's within it's been delegated to the office of the CEO to make sure that we actually meet that target. Chair, I'll pause here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much, Minister. That is a presentation from South African Tourism.
Thank you, Chair of the Board and CFO. Honourable Minister, do you have anything to add before we move to Members of Parliament engaging with the presentation? DM?
No, my understanding was that the DG will come in and do the second one in relation to the forensic report on the EPWP projects that were identified as deficiencies in the 2018-2019 financial year by the AG.
DG, can we invite you to take over and give us this presentation so that members of parliament can engage with all three presentations?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks to the Deputy Minister. Honorable Chairperson, as the DM and the Minister did mention, this is in relation to the 2018-2019 regularity audit conducted by the AGSA. Members would recall that this particular audit was a little bit delayed because of the complexities of the nature of the projects that were supposed to be audited, and the AG even had to employ technical services to come on board so that they could provide built environment type services to quantify and authenticate and so on, after we had also had to do the same. I will go straight to let's move on. Let's start there. The AG found that at that time they found that we did not have certified engineers certificates that would have provided for us to be able to say this is the basis upon which we are stating the amount that we're stating. We had to then discuss this matter with the AG. This was during the audit itself. We had to discuss with the AG to say, AG, given that you've indicated to us you are not getting documents and so on, what we would want you to assist us with is to allow us, given that these projects that we're dealing with, they date back from 2005 all the way up to 2014, and there's one project that also had a second phase in 2016. So all of these projects, given that we are dealing with projects that in most instances, the people that have been handling these things are telling us that they don't have documentation and so on, please allow us to go and get services of built environment professionals so that they can do quantification. And once they've done quantification of this and date that quantification to the original date in terms of the value when that particular project was either suspended or stopped and so on, and then you would be in a position to, we would be in a position to then put in this information in the financials, and when we put it in the financials, you can then go and audit. That issue of not having those certificates. So somebody says the work is completed, this thing is good to go, it's ready and so, but the engineers have actually not said that themselves. So there was no reliability in terms of what would be deemed to be work in progress, which basically means the projects that were still in our hands at the time of that particular audit, which is why they had to use their own people to go and check the work done by the quantity surveyors that we had on board, and that is where the disparities then came up. Let's come to the next one. Petra, slide 6. Yes.
There was poor quality of work delivered by the implementers. There were payments that were made to implementers for work that was not done. There was identification of scope, the issue of identification of scope and the issue of sourcing and so on. These were not necessarily done in an effective manner. And in some instances, it would be things that are actually costing a lot more than what they should. And in some instances, they were not necessarily dealing with testing the market correctly and so on. Let's move on. And then there were delays in the implementation and then the issues about the project budget coming to complete depletion before projects in some instances could even be halfway of completion. And there were scope variations that were not even pre-approved. They were not even evaluated. They were in some instances not even authorized by the requisite people that are supposed to be doing that. So what we then did, once we got those built professional capacity in place, they then quantified and they said, this is what they see. AG then brought its own capacity of built professionals and they went on site together with ours and they then showed ours as to where they do not necessarily agree. And then the final outcome was that there was actually some serious disparities between the figures that were stated and the other figures that they actually identified. And that resulted in the 104, let's go to the next slide. It resulted in an irregular expenditure, and that particular irregular expenditure to the tune of about 104 million rand is a cumulative figure, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful. It's a cumulative figure dating back from the 2005 all the way. Now, that particular figure, irregular expenditure figure, the requirement is that fruitless, irregular, wasteful, and all that should be investigated. And given the complexity of this matter, the forensic investigation was actually commissioned. And that forensic investigation was done by the company as stated there. And we should then move to the actual findings. This is just to indicate the projects themselves and the provinces within which those projects are and the dates each of those different projects actually started. Now, in terms of the findings, the initial findings were the AG's findings. The second set of findings is the findings that goes into who did what. And this is the findings that relate to the forensic. So in this instance, they found that the department failed to ensure that the business plans were approved before the final payment of phase one was made to the implementer. So this is phase one usually is the planning phase. And once that planning phase has been concluded, business plan would also be part of that and it would be signed off to say these are the things that would actually be done in this particular manner and so on. But that payment was actually made before, those payments were made before that was actually signed off. There was no addendum in place with the differences between the MOUs that were signed and the business plans. So what would have been the original intended scope and what then comes out to become the scope, which then also included the 1% of audit fees. And this would have been in contradiction with the section 40, subsection 1A of the PFME. But the emphasis here is that they had to, these two instruments must actually talk to each other and a due process must be followed in terms of such amendments if they are to be entertained. And then there was lack of effectiveness and efficiency in the management of the project in terms of the contracts and so on. And also the issues around you know, the quantities and all of that. And this is to a large degree also part of the losses scope creep was one of the biggest problems that they actually identified. Signing off on the last payment prior to approval of the business plan. Now, this is when the project has actually concluded, but the business plan itself was not even signed. Failure to manage the directorate, this is the specific area that deals with the actual implementation of this and ensuring that the projects are implemented and concluded in line with the business plan and the MOU. So in a large part of the findings they got was that the MOUs and the business plans were not necessarily adhered to. And changes were happening, but those changes were also not necessarily effected accordingly. Failure to conduct site visits and monitoring progress to allocated projects against the payments being processed. So invoice comes, then there should be a site visit that confirms that this is indeed what it is as claimed and so on. Even if it's a layman without technical capacity, at least if they're saying this thing is at a roof and you actually go there and you see the roof and so on. So failure to conduct such monitoring and so on was also a problem. And the percentage completion of projects against budget that has been transferred to these implementing entities. So the progress of the normal work, the work that was supposed to be done, lagged behind throughout. And at the same time, this thing was actually, the payments were actually continuing. And in some instances, you will find money is going to one specific area of the project instead of actually going to other areas as well. And then ultimately, it is said it is used to deal with this area. And there were no changes that were actually done in terms of the MOU in that regard. And failure to ensure that projects are implemented and concluded in line with the approved business plan and MOU. Let's move. The biggest issue is here, where the documentation for this project that is required to corroborate the expenditure is not found. Now, just by way of example, in discussions with the AG, I asked them to say, are we in a position, if we are in a position to show you that we did buy from the lowest bidder, regardless of how much that lowest bidder charged, would you recognize that particular expenditure and then accept that they were doing these things during a time when modified cash accounting system had not yet taken effect? And the AG says, our AG people, they said, yes, we will accept that. But the documents just could not come through. They just could not come through. So hence they are making this huge emphasis about that. And I think the biggest issue was actually within this particular area. And the failure further to make available such documentation to these investigators, the SMG investigators, as I've already mentioned, that is the fruitless and wasteful that was actually highlighted. Let's move on. Next slide, Petra. So they then recommended that corrective action must be taken against relevant officials and implementers for failure to implement the project as per the approved business plan MOU. Go to the next. What we have actually done, we have given the state attorney all these files for them to pursue the whole process of recovery. We do understand it's not going to be an easy process. Most of these projects actually took place a while back. The status of those companies, we don't know at the moment, but the processes had commenced with the state attorney. And unfortunately, once those processes had already commenced, we then found ourselves in a situation where the person was handling these matters within the office of the state attorney left the state attorney's office, and they had to reallocate another person and that process has recommenced. At this stage, they are actually working now with the provincial arms of the State Attorney's Office due to the issues of the jurisdiction on the matters, because these companies are at particular localities. Let's move. Then there was my predecessor had conducted a forensic which did not necessarily look at the internal aspect, but had looked largely at the implementers. And on the basis of that, there were cases as well as civil litigation that had been started. This process, this is a separate process. This process thus far had already gotten to a point where there were some arguments about whether these matters could have prescribed or not and so on. And what has been confirmed is that these matters have not prescribed because at the time of the knowledge of that particular debt by those who are owed being the department, since that particular period, we have not, it has not been 15 years. So as such, it cannot then be deemed to be a prescribed matter. And as such, they have now proceeded with issuance of papers to the various companies, both in Bloemfontein as well as in Free State as well as in the Eastern Cape, with the companies that were identified with this particular one. I've sort of covered three slides there, Petra. Right. You can move on. All right. The second area that's fine. Next slide. Thank you. The second area is ensuring that there is consequence management for those that have been identified. In total, the people that have been identified are seven, which is the DDG that was responsible for the program, who has retired. The chief director was responsible for the program, three directors in the program, as well as Petra, go back to that slide, as well as two deputy directors. We instituted charges against the chief director and another the other one is assistant director, which would make it a total of eight. We instituted some proceedings against some charges and proceedings against the chief director as well as the assistant director. What happened during the process of the charge, but on the day of the year, the person who was presiding over the matter, who is also an officer of the court, inquired as to why, from the employer, he should be entertaining matters that pertain to projects that started in 2005 and so on, and why should this matter now and so on. And the employer did inform the chairperson then that these were matters identified by an audit of 2018-19, audit of which was only concluded by the AG towards the end of 2019 itself. It was not even the usual September where there would be a report. It was slightly after that. And immediately after which the department instituted a forensic investigation of that irregular, fruitless and wasteful, which was then concluded around 2020 May. and the processes then commenced immediately after that. So that was the submission. Notwithstanding that submission, the outcome immediately there was that no, I'm dismissing this case, and I'm dismissing it because I cannot be listening to things that happened so many years ago. The subsequent day, it was then the hearing, day or two, it was then a hearing of the assistant director. And the same thing, but this time around, this chairperson used his own outcome in the previous day, essentially, to make that, to make that almost a precedent that he would then draw from, and that was also then dismissed. We then took that on review, and the matter is currently at the Labour Court, as we feel there is a case to be answered, and we do believe that he has had, because there was these were fresh matters coming from an audit quite immediately. The three directors as well as the two deputy directors, those processes are currently underway. Hearings and all those types of things are underway. And of course, we will report on the matters once they have been concluded duly. I avoided to go into specifics about each individual and what they did, and all those kinds of things. This covers broadly what transgressions from a departmental point of view were covered by the reports. I will stop at that, and thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Honorable Chairperson, back to you. Thank you very much for giving us the time.
Yes, Minister, I can continue.
Person, I was handing it back to you to saying thank you very much. We are aware of the amount of time we've taken from you. We now hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Minister, and together with your team for this comprehensive report back to the Portfolio Committee in terms of processes that are undertaken to remedy and correct administrative errors that resulted in the department and the entity not being audited favorably by the Auditor General. We want to welcome corrective measures because this is what we are tasked all of us to do, us as the arm that is dealing with oversight, so that we ensure that state resources, limited resources that are directed to the tourism space, its products, and appropriately. So that at the end of the day, tourism does flourish with the limited resources that we have. We can be able to slice a cake or be able to benefit a number of people who are directly involved in the tourism space. Honorable members, I will then hand over to yourselves with an indication for you to be able to engage with the presentation and the report as presented to the Portfolio Committee by the department, reporting back as they had promised to revert back to the Portfolio Committee with answers, with concrete answers, as they were going to get to the root causes of all this maladministration, malfeasance, and all the red flags that were picked up by the Portfolio Committee in their endeavor to do their oversight. Honorable members, I will then afford the opportunity to Honorable Sithole, Honorable Keta Mavala, you will be first in line, followed by Honorable Gomba. In that sequence, if you have anything to engage with the department. Honorable Keta Mavala.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. And thank you to the Minister and the Deputy Minister, the DG and the officials from SAA and other officials from the department for the comprehensive report that you received today. Thank you very much for what you have done. It means that what we have raised on last year actually is bearing fruit now. But my concern, Chairperson, and the minister and the department, is most of the reports, they have work in progress. Those work in progress doesn't have any time frame. If they can give us the time frame for all that work in progress, so that we can understand and we can monitor and evaluate what they told us today, I can be very happy if that one can happen, Chairperson. And the other one, Chairperson, I'm worried about the three DG and two deputy DG, because if you check the report, it seems that their cases were withdrawn, were provisionally withdrawn. I didn't find that in 2020. I didn't find out what was the reason for the withdrawal of that of that cases, and why they have been irritated now in 2021, and do the department have a strong case against them, or they are just doing it now without having a strong case against them? Because it is really actually disturbing if somebody go to court and won the case against the department. If that one can be clarified. And the other one, Chairperson, I'm trying to check the duty of our auditor general, of our internal auditor, because it seems that our internal auditor are not doing their work properly, because we cannot always depend on auditor general, whereas we do have internal auditing. So what are they doing if they don't discover all the work that's been discovered by auditor general? And the last one, Chairperson, is that one of the management. Do they have any mechanism now or system in place that will monitor all our recommendations, all the auditor general's findings from now onwards? If they do have, I can be very happy if you can get that information. If they don't have, they can give us a reason why they don't have it. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And let's thank the Chair for the opportunity and compliment everyone for the new year and wish all the best to everyone for this current year, which is 2022. Honorable Chair, I have a question here. I have had a very good recommendations that the department came up with in order to resolve issues that were raised by the AG. But I didn't hear more about the Risk Management Committee, because I think it's a very important department that needs to be, that we need to ensure that it is functional and doing its work, because it will be able to see issues that may be risky to the management itself, and also the decisions that may actually compromise the department if you really have the risk management, we'll be able to see those things as early as possible. Honorable Chair, I think also it is important that we note that we found the AG report saw that some material irregularities in the office. Therefore, there were some record keeping challenges that the AG office had to see there. They could not actually get a proper record keeping system, which I didn't hear the presentation alluding to that. It is very important for us to know how you are going to actually address the issue of internal controls like record keeping, so that it is easy for the department to be audited by the AG office. The other issue which was very, very worrying in the previous presentation that was said by the AG here was that the department relied on the third party information because they did not have their own system, which was there. I think it was around the TOMSAL issue. So I'm not sure if the department has come up with a way of dealing with the third party, of doing away with the third party information in order for them to provide correct information to the AG. They should have their own internal controls and their systems that will assist them to come out and give proof or evidence to the Auditor General than relying to TOMSA. I think the department that is relating to that, those issues will respond appropriately coming to that and on how they're going to resolve this. Because I don't think it is very, very good that the department rely on the third party for information and even eventually fail to account for those public tests that they have been using. And also, Honorable Chair, it is very, very important to know that we have seen the report here, had the report of 2018-2019, which is the irregularities which were found by the AG. We're saying the first question that I want to know is that who referred the matter to the state advocate and or who recommended that that matter should go there, because I think there must be internal processes that are must be dealt with by the portfolio committee first before they go to the state advocate. So hence I want to understand the recommendation that was done by that who did that recommendation of referring the matter to the state advocate. Was it the portfolio committee who recommended that, or is only officials who recommended to send that same report to the state advocate? Was there any consensus on or any resolution from the portfolio committee? And also, do you have to the DG also, do you have any document that is actually stipulating the fact that the matter was dismissed instead of being, more investigation being conducted, but the matter is decided to be dismissed by the person who was supposed to proceed on, to preside on, because they say the matter is an old matter. Do you have any document that refers to that? And if there is, can we have the document so that we can be able to see what was that referring to and why was it dismissed and why was the matter referred to as an old matter when the matter is about the public purse? So that's what we want to know. The matter referred to as an old matter when the matter is not even resolved by the committee, or when the monies are not even discovered, but the matter is referred as an old matter. We want to have that document, DG, who just presented to us now to say that the matter was striking off, or should I say cancelled. Yes, two documents that we want to see, Honorable Chair. If I can summarize it in short again to say, do we have any letter that is referring to the matter that the matter was cancelled, or it was referred to as a matter that is an old matter from the previous financial years, so that we can be able to be in the good, in the same level of understanding? I mean, we started only in 2019, so we are not very much sure about those documents. And the other one is that who recommended the matter that it should be going to the state advocate when the committee is there? Is that a resolution of the committee? If that is the resolution of the committee, can we also get that through the Hansard and verify that matter? Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Gomba. Can we then invite the Honorable De Freitas, if he is still in the platform, but we had received an apology that he will be leaving by 11 o'clock. Perhaps indicate to us, Mr. Boltina, if Mr. Honorable, if invite him to put his questions or comments. He will be followed by Honorable Moteka, who will be followed by Honorable Winkler in that sequence. If Honorable De Freitas is not on the platform, can I invite Honorable Moteka, who will be followed by the Honorable Winkler? Honorable Moteka? Honorable Winkler, over to you.
Thank you, Acting Chairperson, and thank you for the findings of Auditor General and the response to those. I just have a few questions. What is the nature of the consequent management that's going to take place with regard to employees who have been found to have committed some inappropriate actions within the department? And then the other question I have is, with regards to the oversight role that the department plays, what is that specifically with regard to when funds are transferred to the South African Tourism Board or the entity for disbursement to various beneficiaries? Because we did have a problem there about the third-party payments that was flagged by the AG. With regard to the double payments for the Tourism Guide Relief Fund, ghost employees, staff members from local government, etc., how long will these investigations take to verify and until we know what the exact extent of the wrongdoing is? And how are we going to ensure that there is a central database of all the tour guides in the country so that the sort of double dipping and ghost employees, et cetera, doesn't reoccur in the future? And how far are we actually now in implementing the recovery process of the funds that were disbursed to incorrect individuals? And then I just have one more question. As the two previous speakers have asked, is what exactly are we going to do to strengthen these internal controls so that it doesn't land up in a situation where the AG, you know, has all these contrary findings so that we prevent this sort of issue from reoccurrence in the future? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Winkler. I will now invite Honorable April, followed by Honorable Gumbi, and then Honorable Mpushe, in that order. Honorable April,
If Honorable April is not on the platform, Honorable Gumbi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks very much for the presenters. Chair, I think that there's something which is cross-cutting between this department and other departments where a lot happens and then the reports come back talking about strengthening internal controls, and it becomes something that, you know, people get around those internal controls and then you come back again and we have to strengthen them in one way or another. So, but I think that that's a conversation we probably have to have after we have finalization on all of the outstanding matters in terms of the various responses. So my questions are covered, but obviously I just want to emphasize on the matter of time frames. So what in essence is the time frame for those all the outstanding matters for every line item from the minister and department, as well as for the portfolio committee, in the same way that we had this meeting lined up as to say that, you know, we need responses to all those questions. I think that on all the outstanding matters, we need to have a specific day dedicated to getting all of that. But that's on the side of us as a portfolio committee. But yeah, so I think that it's just to get the timeframes from the minister and departments. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Pushe, I now invite you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Greetings, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, the Honorable Members, in the entire leadership of the department and the staff of the committee. I don't have any further questions as those that have been raised, except to appreciate and welcome the presentation on the responses of that which we have raised in our last portfolio committee meeting, Chair. I really appreciate the prompt response, and I so appreciate the understanding of the Honorable Minister in that all that the process seeks to ensure that the department progress to clean audit. Also the fact that there are measures in place to ensure that there's consequence management for the wrongdoers, Chairperson, the corrective measures that are in place. I'm grateful, Chairperson, and that there are plans in place to improve the audit outcomes. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mpushe. I now invite Honorable Mieni, who will be followed by Honorable Kweko. Honorable Mieni, if Honorable Mieni is not on the platform, can I invite the Honorable Kweko? Honorable Kweko? Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. These honorables are not on the platform. Honorable members, can I also, I also have two issues to be raised. DG, thank you very much for the correction. It was an error from my side to say the department has received a qualified audit opinion. The department has not received a qualified opinion. It is unqualified. It only has matters of emphasis. It is only the entity that has received a qualified audit opinion for the financial year in question. Thank you very much for the correction. Can I get an understanding? That is to the CFO of SAT. I've heard the madam say they have put independent internal audit. Perhaps it's my understanding, or maybe I need to be schooled correctly. If you are saying independent internal audit, how independent is an internal audit? Is an independent audit not supposed to be coming from externally? So if I'm incorrect, can you just take us through to say how independent our systems of internal audit within the environment of an organization. And then secondly, Honorable Minister, with regards to the anti-corruption PSC complaint that has been lodged, can we as the committee be kept abreast quarterly, if that's permissible? We do not want every time you come to the committee that we'll be probing you on the progress of this investigation around the cookout event that happened in Tembisa. But can we then perhaps on a quarterly basis be given a progress to say, in terms of the investigation, this is what is happening, and this is where the investigation is at currently, because it will then also allow us to be able to engage thoroughly with such complaints, and we will be able to execute our oversight responsibilities as this portfolio committee of tourism. Honorable members, these were your comments and your questions. I will now invite the department led by the minister to start engaging on responses to the comments and to the questions. Over to you, Madam Minister. DM.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And we've taken copious notes on the questions that you've asked, and I will assign some of them to the DG and some of them to the Deputy Minister. And those that have to do with the SAT will be attended to by the acting chairperson. I just want to just start off with a question that was asked by Gumbi. Not Gumbi, the chair of the SAT, but the member of parliament, Gumbi, who says, we keep saying that we are dealing with these problems and you know, assure that we will look into that and make sure that there's proper consequence management and all of these things. I wanted to say to him that, well, in the nature of anything that lives or moves, there will be constant oversight and there will be constant attempt to get better. I don't think that we will ever get to a time in the life of any living organism, whether it is government or where we will have a perfect state. So whenever we come across something that we find should not have happened, we then go back and look at it and make sure that we amend the regulations, tighten the regulations. This is a continuous ongoing process with most matters in government. We would like Parliament to understand that when we say we're going to make sure that we deal with it, we actually mean it. And if they take note of it and come back to us later and check up on how far we are with that, they will find that we've gone very far indeed. We had a very comprehensive discussion ourselves yesterday, and it was a very instructive discussion, because some of the things that we are attending to now were not necessarily raised by the Auditor General now, but we took a view that these are constant questions that are asked by Parliament, and therefore we must attend to them. So in our response, we tried to be as comprehensive as possible and deal with all of those matters that in the past had been raised by yourselves, and we will do so continuously. Where we say we are looking into the matter and we will ensure that it doesn't happen again, we will come back to that and indicate what steps have been taken and what, well, you will find that in that particular instance, there will not be a recurrence of that problem. We also discovered yesterday when we were dealing with this in preparation for this meeting with yourselves, that on the matter of the funds that were given to tourist guides. I think the DG explained the process that has that we've undertaken, but we also had an internal introspection and found that actually the law requires of us to have continuous oversight over the over resources that are allocated to us through the Division of Revenue Act. The Deputy Minister read out a section that confirmed that in our legislation, which we had completely overlooked until yesterday. Therefore, we have a responsibility continuously to investigate all the resources that come through us, wherever they go. Finally, they come out of Cabinet, out of Parliament in our name, and we should have continuous oversight over that. We have worked out a way, which we will discuss with you at another time, of making sure that we have complete control of monies that go into the local government sphere or into the second layer of government. Because we have in the past said, look, this is not within our sphere. It goes into local government and local government employs tour guides and et cetera. But in terms of the legislation that was read to us by the Deputy Minister, we actually have final responsibility of making sure that that is put in place under the supervision of the department. So we're going to come back to you to amend our legislation or our regulations around the tour guides and how they are paid and et cetera. And when we do that, we are hoping that you will be satisfied that we will not have a recurrence of what has happened that has been flagged by the Auditor General over the matter that we have defined as lying outside of our responsibility. Very little here that we are accounting for lies outside of our responsibility. And therefore, if we have used that term in the past, we want to withdraw. We are accountable for everything that comes through us. We should put in place those measures that make it possible for the people that are the end users of our resources to account to us as fully as possible so that we are able to account to you. There was a question about what is the nature of consequence management. We use the term consequence management. The nature of consequence management means that we do an internal investigation and we make sure that whoever has been found guilty or in the wrong of any of the matters that you have raised with us, that the necessary consequences are taken on by that particular person. I do know that it sounds very wishy-washy, but that is the terminology that is used by our officials in government. I think in future we will be very specific what it is that we mean by consequence management. It actually depends on the outcome of the particular investigation that we are going to undertake. But if it is an uncomfortable cover all kind of phrase, we will find another phrase. And insofar as the recovery process of the funds, I think the DG will be able to answer that. We must find a way in which we can recover these dispersed resources to people who have long passed away. And we think that we will be able to amend the legislation, as I've indicated, and we hope you will accept it at the soonest possible time so that we don't have a recurrence of the situation, which has been greatly embarrassing to us. How many times shall we assure that I think that you know that things will be better? We will keep a template of what it is that we promise, and if we promise that we're going to do better, then we're going to make sure that we, by the time we come to you, we attend to that which we have done until we are in a situation where most of these glitches that have been reported do not recur. The PSC report PSC sent us a letter that we sent you, and we thought we would read it out to you so that you know that it has been taken over by another arm of the state. We will indicate to them that Parliament would like to have a quarterly report, and we hope that they will oblige us with that. But otherwise, they are responsible for the investigation, and they were merely informing us in writing that they are dealing with the matter. We will follow up and ask them to provide us with quarterly reports, and if they find that it is within our right to do that, they will most obviously agree with us and comply, and we will provide that to the portfolio committee. Most of the other questions, I think, will be answered by the DG and the acting chair of South African Tourism Board and the deputy minister as well. He has been very quiet, and which I find very regrettable, because he's a very knowledgeable man in most of the issues that we are dealing with, and I hope that he will raise his hand and contribute to the discussion. It's been a very rich discussion, and we need to have it as rich as possible, so that as we go forward, you know that what we assure you of and what we report to you is indeed what we are going to do, is indeed what has happened, and we can build a certain level of trust between ourselves. That we will provide you with as much support and with as much information as possible. We ourselves were not aware of some of the issues that were raised in the Auditor General's report, and we had a lengthy discussion with the Auditor General, and they were very emphatic about some of the language that they were using. We have asked them to give us a recording of the discussion with themselves, and that has not been forthcoming, but their language to us, when they spoke to us, was very firm, in some cases a bit damning. We will make sure that we work with them as closely as possible so that we can eliminate some of these issues before they are reported to Parliament, so that by the time they're reported to Parliament, we would indicate this is what has been reported and this is what we have done. I'll now hand over to the Deputy Minister if he has anything to add, and then hand over to the Chair of the Tourism Board, and the DG will close the discussion in answering most of the questions that have been put forward. Thank you, Comrade Chair. Sorry, thank you, Chairperson.
DM?
No, thank you, Chair. Let me allow the first the DG and the SAT to deal with the detailed issues. But maybe before that happens, Chair, maybe it's better to just draw attention to the committee on the presentations themselves, especially the two presentations. You have a column. I'm dealing with the time frame issues that the members have raised. You have got a column in the presentation that indicates responsible officials and time frame. Unless members are saying this time frame that are reflected here, they are not comfortable about them, then that will be another debate. But there is time frames that are reflected on the presentation. And secondly, that we, out of the 117 audit outcomes that the Auditor General has made, we have indicated from the beginning that we have achieved 60% of them, which represents 70 out of the 116, and 29% it's partial achieves and in process.
and then 30% of them is not yet due, and we do indicate in the time frames when since they are not yet due, when are they due, and when do we intend to attend to them once they are due. And then on the partial achievement in progress, we do reflect the timelines or the time frame when will this that is in process we're intending to make sure that they are completed. As I'm saying, there might be if members might not be comfortable about the timeline, it's a matter that maybe we need to look into it and see how to deal with that. But there is time frames that has been put in place in the presentation. So we will really appeal that members must therefore look into that time frame and then use these time frames to make us account in terms of how are we finalizing these matters that are still outstanding. That is the 40% that is still outstanding. So that's my comment, Chair, but I might come in maybe after the two has responded. If there are things that might be missing in the process, we might then come in and conclude at the end. Thanks.
Thanks, Madam Chairperson of the Board.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. But very quickly, I think in line with what the Deputy Minister has said, from the SAT, we have indicated the time frames. So for consequence management, it will be the end of March. The legal process is out of our hands, as you would know, Chairperson, that one, we don't know how long it will take. It's in the hands of the court. On the question of raised by Honorable Gomba on the Thompson levy issue, it's a policy issue. The policy issue. The Thompson levy is a voluntary levy that is collected by third parties and transmitted to SAT. It's voluntary. So some hotels participate and others don't. Some attractions participate, others don't. So you really largely, it is designed in such a way that you largely depend on your partner to let you know how much was collected and paid over. We work very closely with them, but it's a matter that, as you know, we appeared before you. I was part of a different group looking at the tourism policy when we appeared before you, and it's one of the issues that we discussed about whether it remains a voluntary levy or not, and if it's not, then I think the minister and deputy minister and the department will have a better control over it. The final one, Chairperson, on internal audit. Like in any organization, the function of internal audit is independent within the organization, and they report directly to the board, not to management. And in SAT, it's no different. And in fact, internal audit helped us a lot with identifying the causes that led us to appoint a forensic audit, because the internal audit function doesn't report to management. They report independently to the board, directly to the board. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Largely covered by the Minister and the Deputy Minister. Very few specific issues. One is the withdrawal of the charges. Why did we withdraw the charges? We, after the two cases that I mentioned, we then realized we needed to withdraw the charges and obtain an opinion on whether what this chairperson of the disciplinary hearing decided was something that was legit or was not. And only after that, then we were in a position to then go back and reinstate the charges. The second area that is somewhat related to that is what did we have? So after any proceeding of a disciplinary nature, there is a record of decision that is then issued by the person who would have checked that hearing. So that is the document that was issued, and that record of decision is what we then used as the basis to challenge that and took the matter on review. The issue of state attorney and their role in these processes. The PFMA requires of the accounting officer, stroke DG, to make sure that if there are matters of irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, such matters must be firstly investigated. Secondly, such matters where there is wrongdoing that has been identified, action must be taken. And those types of actions include ensuring that there is recovery of such money is instituted. The cases are reported to the police, as well as ensuring that disciplinary processes are undertaken. In the event that an accounting officer doesn't do that, the Public Audit Act, the latest amendments of that, where to deal with that specific aspect, where you then have to issue, they would then issue, the AG would then issue a letter of debt in personal capacity to such an accounting officer in that regard. Where the honorable members come in is when such matters have been dealt with, and then we bring them so firstly is when the matters are actually reported in the annual report for accountability. And secondly is when the matters have been dealt with and we have reported the matters to the executive authority. And when the minister has then brought these matters here to say, this is what we have actually dealt with and so on, those questions then can be discussed and so on. But at the moment, most of these matters are actually in their respective processes. Some of them involve processes that are actually currently underway, where what we say could be material in that regard. So hence we don't necessarily go into the details of the substance of the matters. The Risk Management Committee, we do have a functional Risk Management Committee, which is independently chaired by an external person. I do have my meetings from time to time with that particular chairperson on matters that are identified on their side. And such matters then find their way into our plans in terms of the work that is done by the internal audit, but also if it's matters of aspects that management must strengthen, they also integrate those in terms of their own actions. And all these matters ultimately also then go to the internal audit, to the audit committee that looks at whether we are actually dealing with these things or not. And even the reports of the risk management committee, they do serve also at the audit committee, where they look at synchronization so that there's totality of all the different areas where the risks are being identified, that they are getting some form of oversight as well from that particular mechanism as well. The reliance on on third-party systems. There's two parts to this. One is when we are dealing with aspects that would require. I'll give an example. When we were dealing with issues of the relief funds, I made contact with SARS and I said to them, is it possible at all that you would be able to assist us with identification of whether these people that are here are taxpayers or not? And this was in the initial phases. And they were quite emphatic that they will not do it. And they said they do not share their information of the information of a taxpayer. The only time that they would be in a position, we would be in a position to access such information, is that the persons who are doing such business with us themselves must be the ones who bring that information to us, because they're the ones with the PIN to access their profile within the tax system. Now, that on its own says there's nothing that as a department we can be able to do around that. Now, the biggest challenge where we become reliant on some of these third-party systems is this issue of people doing business with the state. If a person is not an employee of our department, is not an employee of a provincial department, is not an employee of any other national department, we don't have a way of actually detecting people that are working for entities and all those kinds of things. So often we actually get this information secondary when AG comes and say in their CAT system, as they were running their own verifications and so on, they were able to detect this and to detect that. So that's where some of these dependencies actually come in, and they become a bit of a challenge. And that's why we said the way for us to be able to close that sort of gap is this in-year audit services from the AG side, but also to go beyond the declaration forms where people can then declare whatever interest and so on, and actually give a specimen of a letter that already provides for the content to say, I, and the person will then put their name and ID number and all that, and state explicitly that I'm not employed by any organ of state. If that then gets signed, and then the person, we then find out later, that's something that there would be two issues to deal with. Firstly, the fact that the person is employed by the state, but the other aspect is that the person lied in these documents that would have been submitted to us. The last issue is the aspect about the record keeping. We indicated in the finding itself, the aspects of record keeping related a lot more to information that is coming from our implementing agents. And we have got a number of actions that we've identified, including the standardization of how the information should be submitted, and also the verification of the information and associated quality steps that should take place internally once that information has been submitted, and also how it should be filed in terms of the repository of that particular information. So that is something that we have got some controls around. I do want to highlight one area that I believe is if we don't highlight, it may be an omission on our part. In terms of loss control, we have put a lot of mechanisms to make sure that we prevent that. But I do want to highlight to the honorable members that there will still be instances where some things are unforeseeable, and that's why you would find such language used also in the regulations and so on. There will be instances of unforeseeable circumstances. Someone is supposed to fly somewhere, the person is ill. Someone we are supposed to convene a particular meeting, and people actually drop out of that meeting in the last minute, and we've got a venue. Those things, the amounts may not be a lot, but those things would still happen. We may get the price of the ticket, I mean the money paid for the ticket back, but would still have some taxes here and so on that may not necessarily be recoverable. So those kinds of things, when running an operation of 2.4 billion in totality, inclusive of the entity, there will be some small losses that may be incurred. And we have put these controls to make sure that we minimize such as much as we possibly can. But we can't say that it will never happen. It would be misleading of us to say that to the honorable members. I will stop at that, honorable members. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, DG. DM, do you want to come in as previously indicated?
No, Dr. Chair, just to come in and make closing comment in relation to what the DG has said and the chair of the SAT, that we want to first and foremost indicate that we appreciate the opportunity given to us as department to be able to come and share with yourself in terms of what progress are we're making. And we appreciate the wisdom that you are sharing with us in terms of some of the issues that you feel we need to do it better. And we promise that we will work together with yourselves so that we're able to improve the audit outcome, because that's our main goal and our intention, all of us, is that at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we improve the audit outcome in a manner that is acceptable, that we're able to achieve the best possible results in terms of managing the public pairs, so that we don't spend most of the time discussing these issues, but spend more time discussing the service delivery that we are expected to do and provide to our people, as opposed to spending more time on issues that we should have addressed internally and make sure that it doesn't happen. And then you focus mainly on our deliverables and the outcomes that we are delivering to our communities. So it's a commitment that we're making that we'll work very hard to make sure that we address all these irregularities and commit the administration to do much more better. In terms of making sure that we follow the prescripts as stipulated in the PFMA. Honorable Winter raised that the issue of consequence management. What consequence management means is that it's a legislative and regulatory framework that applies in order to address issues of misconduct, issues of fraud, issues of corruption, issues of unethical conduct and behavior in the public sector. So that's what literally means. And therefore, the form and the content it takes, it depends on the process that gets engaged as part of addressing some of those matters that arise.
I thought that DG will deal with the internal audit, but the issue that the chair has raised with the SAT equally applies to the department in terms of the internal audit work that they are doing. Some of the regularities get picked up by them before even the AG comes in. And by the time the AG picks them up, it has already been picked up by the internal audit in some of the instances. But the challenge is the extent to which then the administration become responsive to some of these issues. And that's the issue that we are committing ourselves, that we'll try to make sure that there is a better responsive on the part of the administration. There is a commitment from the top management to address these issues and be hands-on and make sure that things are done in accordance with what the laws requires us to do. And we are committing ourselves that we are going to look at this matter of the tourist guides and how the system worked. We are in the process of looking as to extent to which how do we make it credible. So we'll come back at some point to the committee to indicate the policy direction and the policy position that we are taking in relation to this matter, so that we're able to make sure that the system become credible. And such occurrences, it doesn't happen going forward. The minister yesterday was raising something very critical, that we've got a huge challenge of safety of our tourists in the country. The question that then arises is that what is the role of the tourist guide? Because most of the time, the tourists are in their hands. And they've got this challenge of tourist safety being some of the challenges. How do we use them in a manner that enables them to make a contribution towards creating a safer environment to our tourists? So those are some of the things that we'll want to engage upon and see how best to improve. Yeah, General, that's the comment, Chair, that I can make in relation to the issues that members have raised. If there are questions that we might not have properly responded to, we'll appreciate if that can be reflected, and then maybe we then able to respond in writing if those matters have not been properly captured. Thanks.
Thank you very much. On that note, honourable members, allow me then on behalf of the portfolio committee to appreciate this engagement that we have just concluded.
Yes, my hand is up. I thought you have recognized it.
No, I have not. I had not seen your hand, but can you come in?
Yes, I'm just quickly rushing through the question which was not responded according to, you know, I'm not satisfied in the manner that the question was responded to by the DG, which is saying we refer, I would love to have a document, Honorable Chair, that refers to the dismissal of the EPWP due to its due to the fact that the case itself is an old case. And also, after getting that document, Honorable Chair, I would also like to know who referred the matter to the state advocate. And those questions were not appropriately responded to. So after the deputy minister has said that other questions which were not responded to accordingly, he will definitely love to have them and respond them in writing. Can we have those documents in writing and with their attachments, which are referring to as to who said that document, the matter must go to the state advocate, and also the matter that it was dismissed due to the fact that it's an old matter. The document must be attached from the office of the minister or deputy minister. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable members. What will happen is that all that you have said, honorable Gomba, will be captured accordingly with the assistance of the secretariat of this committee. We will also put this in writing, send it through to the department so that it gets responded to in writing. I will not be opening up the space for engagement anymore. I will then allow us to be able to conclude this meeting by indicating that the committee does appreciate this positive engagement that we have held currently. I must indicate that we have started the year on a good footing. It is positive, and we are determined as the portfolio committee to work collectively with the department. We understand our area of oversight. We also understand their area of providing service, the deliverables that they should be providing to citizens and the country. However, in the line of these deliverables, there are issues or administrative issues that get bled or that are not conducted in a proper way, and thus there has to be consequences for such errors. Honorable members, as we have indicated, that in our endeavor to conduct oversight as this portfolio committee, we will do so robustly, we will do so constructively. And we appreciate the fact that the minister or the executive responsible, the minister and the DM, together with the department and the entity, did come back to us to actually give us the mitigating administrative corrective measures that they have undertaken to correct all the issues that we have raised. However, others are ongoing. And as they are ongoing, they will be reflected in future reports. In that, on that note, honorable members and department, I will then allow you to exit the platform and request that only members of parliament, with those that are supporting us as members of parliament, remain in the platform so that we can be able to continue with our internal committee work, or we can continue with our housekeeping for the portfolio committee ahead of the of the year, as this is our first portfolio committee meeting for the year 2020. Thank you very much. I must say this was a fruitful engagement. However, where we feel that questions were not answered adequately, we know the processes. We will engage with our secretariat together with the department, and then we will iron out issues that are not properly ironed out. I will then also at this time invite the secretariat to flight our agenda so that we can see where we are heading to in terms of our agreed agenda. Can we move down? We have the first committee program for the first term, the draft committee. Can you take us through, Mr. Poltina?
Yes, I'm not sure in the interest of time, now that it's already over 12:15 already. But what we have done, Chair, the committee members will recall last year, we have adopted a first term committee program, a program that was designed to take the committee through from now up to the 1st of April. We've done that, we've tabled it to the committee. Committee considered it, and then they finally approved this program. Then thereafter, the program had to be submitted to the Office of the House Chairperson. That was done on the 8th of December. And subsequent to that, our program now, the one which is before us, remains an approved program, Chairperson. So what we just need to do now is just to send out letters to all the affected parties that will be meeting them in terms of the way forward going through up to the first of April, Chairperson. So basically, our program, it has been approved. It's here in front of us, Chair. Then what we will then do now is just to make a follow-up with a series of letters that will go to our stakeholders, especially those who will have to engage them. Already for the minister, for the department and the entity, their letters are already with them. The department is aware that on the 1st of February, they have to meet with the committee to present the first term, the first quarter and the second quarter performance report of 2021-2022. And then on the 8th of February, then the SAT will also do the same, come to the committee and present the first quarter and the second quarter of 2021-22. And then on Thursday, the 10th of February, Chairperson, all members know we will have a joint sitting on the State of the Nation address by the President. That is the parliamentary is in the parliamentary calendar, Chairperson. We just put it here on the program so that it can always be in front of our eyes. And then on the Tuesday of the 15th, our content advisor and the researcher will assist us on the analysis of that so that they can to lift those issues that are of importance to us as a sector, as tourism. Then what we're also saying on item number 6 on the 22nd of February, Chair.
Chair. Yeah, I'm confused because our secretary says it is already approved our year agenda, but now he's keeping on now lecturing about it now. So now I don't know what is happening now. Because if the plan was agreed upon.
Can I guide Honorable Sithole? This program was agreed upon last year. What I will then request the secretariat is that the program is in front of us. We as members of parliament do have it in our own systems. And he has spoken to it up until SONA, which is the 10th of February. Let us close it at SONA and allow members in our next engagement to engage with other calendar items that are on the program. But for now, we know that from the 1st of February and the 8th of February, we'll be engaging with the department and the entity respectively. And then on the 10th of February, it is the joint address, which is the joint sitting of the SONA, where the president will be addressing us as the nation and members of parliament. So let's leave it at that, Honorable Ketamabala and Mr. Boltina. And then move straight to outstanding minutes. Can we have the outstanding minutes flighted on the program, on the screen?
Honorable Chair.
I note you, Honorable Gomba.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chair, I think that I want to go back to the program, which was agreed upon up until April. So I'm worried when you say that let's leave it up until the 10th and after SONA. Maybe you can clarify us as to why we have to still go there when the program has been agreed upon already.
The program is agreed upon, but the secretariat was reading to us line by line. So what I am guiding is that let we go up until SONA. All the other items are there. It's a program that is agreed upon. It's a program that is that also went through all the processes of the House Chair for committees. So it's our program that we are working on, that we are guided on. We are continuing with our work as a portfolio committee, guided by this program.
Okay.
What I was saying is that the secretariat must not read to us line by line, because it's a program that all of us have in our systems. Unless I am mistaken, Mr. Boltina, is there any member of parliament who does not have this program?
No, all committee members, Chairperson, they do have the program as it was agreed, but we were just doing just for members to recap on what is on the program. But if members feel it that way, no, we can stop it there, Chairperson, on item number 10 on the State of the Nation address. And then what we can do if members still have time, and then we can go to just to the minutes of the previous meeting. Or if members still wants to, we can defer then those minutes to the next meeting when we have with the department. I'm sure we'll have sufficient time at that time. I'm not quite sure.
Well, thank you, Mr. Boltina. What I was saying is the program is our program.
Yes.
Only what we were reading is the three line items, the 1st of February, the 8th of February, and the 10th of February, because those are calendar items that are in the next future, in the next three engagements that we'll be engaging with. It will be with the department next week, which is the 1st of February, and also on the 8th, and then following that will be the joint sitting of the State of the Nation. Honorable members, can we then move to the minutes? The set of minutes, can they be flighted?
Chairperson.
Honorable Ketamabala.
Please, can I propose that we refer the minutes to the next meeting?
Before that, Honorable Ketamabala, can I guide the members on how we are going to proceed? Dr. Kuzwayo, can you flight the minutes? Dr. Kuzwayo, are you on the platform?
Yes, I am, Chairperson, but I'm struggling because I have to download them. It's very low. I have to download the minutes. If you have the minutes inside them, if you have the slide, because I'm struggling to slide.
Mr. Boltina?
I'm just checking, Chair. What is this now?
Okay, honorable members, all of us do have these minutes. This is the agenda, Mr. Kusa.
Honorable Chair,
okay.
Honorable Chair,
before you come in, Honorable Gumba, I will allow you to come in. But honorable members, the minutes that are in question, or the draft minutes that we are wanting to consider or will consider in our next meeting, is the minutes of the 7th of December, 2021, where the agenda of the committee was a consideration of the program that we were engaging on, and the meeting was chaired by the Honorable Gomba. We have this set of minutes. What I want to guide is that for us to process them quickly in the next meeting that we are going to have on the 1st of February. Yes, these are the minutes, honorable members. And we have, first, we have Honorable Sithole, who has proposed that we do not engage with this meeting minutes, we defer them to the next meeting. Can I have a seconder? If there is a member who is saying that he agrees with the proposal by Honorable Sithole. And then also, if there is a member who is saying, let us continue with the adoption of the minutes.
Yes, Honorable Chair, that's why I raised my hand based on that.
Honorable Gomba.
Yes, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, all of us received the minutes, the set of minutes, many days before this meeting can sit. And we managed to get the opportunity to go through the minutes. And also taking into consideration that on the 1st of February, this minutes, or even the program itself, need to be in the meeting. At the higher level of those officials of parliament, I proposed the adoption of the minutes, because we really had the time to read them, and there's no more time to postpone due to the fact that there must be a meeting that deals with the same set of minutes. And that's why I propose that we adopt them today, so that we really don't waste time and eventually even adopt the minutes in the next coming financial year. Honorable Chair, thank you. Avoiding that, we're trying to avoid that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Gomba and Honorable Ketamabala. The Honorable Gomba has moved, has proposed that we continue with the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of what transpired in the Portfolio Committee meeting of the 7th of December, 2021. Can I have a seconder? Do we have an honorable member who wants to second the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection, as proposed by Honorable Gomba?
Yes, Chair, I second the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of our meeting.
Honorable Mpushe has seconded the adoption of the minutes. Do we have a contrary view? Any member who is saying this is not a true reflection of what transpired? In that case, honorable members, these sets of minutes, this set of minutes for the date of the 7th of December are duly adopted in this portfolio committee. We will then move to announcements. Mr. Boltina?
Chair, there isn't much except two issues. One, Chair, is that members, I'm sure by now, they may have realized or noticed that Honorable T.D. Khalipa is no longer a member of this portfolio committee, Chairperson. I understand that he's an executive mayor of a certain municipality somewhere in the Free State. So he's no longer a member of this committee. Up to now, we have not yet been told by the office of the chief whip as to who will be replacing him in this portfolio committee, Chairperson. We are still waiting for that information. And then the second thing, there is also a recommendation that is flowing from the Women's Parliament 2021 report that has been referred to the Portfolio Committee, Chairperson. So they want us that to oversee the implementation of that matter by the Department of Tourism that relates to women empowerment in the tourism and programs for them that will enable them to participate fully in the tourism matters, Chairperson. Those are the only two issues that I have on my side, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Boltina. Honorable members, we have now come to the conclusion of our meeting for the 25th of January 2022, which was our first engagement as this Portfolio Committee on Tourism. Allow me, honorable members, to appreciate this fruitful engagement, this constructive engagement, and further wish all of us a blessed and a fruitful 2022 as we endeavor to conduct our oversight in a manner that will be robust, constructive, and that will ensure that the department does deliver on what they have set out to set out as deliverables. Without fear or favor, we will be able to engage with the department, engage with the executive, and hold them to account. This is what we have been doing. This is what we have undertaken in this 3 hours of a session that we've held from this morning and up until now. Honorable members, it is appreciated that from all of us that we are taking seriously to the oath of office that we have undertook as members of parliament, and we are true to our own organizational manifestos, as we understand that as members of parliament, we belong to political parties first, and we have promised the citizens of South Africa this is what we are going to do. And in this area that we are assigned to, which is the National Department of Tourism, together with its entity, which is SAT, we are doing exactly what we have come to Parliament to do. And it is much appreciated that we can engage with each other and hold the executive and the department to account. Honorable members, we have come to the conclusion of the meeting, and this meeting stands adjourned up until the next meeting, which is the 1st of February. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.